From Altoona to Harrisburg, Greensburg to Erie, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Governor Josh Shapiro is trying to place the blame for rising electric prices on operators of the PJM power grid. But our Capital Watch crew is here to explain how it is the governor's energy policies that threaten our electric supply. And Governor Shapiro should hold the moral high ground when discussing political violence, but he has squandered it by demagoguing the issue to advance his own political ambitions. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The Republican Party of Pennsylvania, following the playbook that led to now U.S. Senator Dave McCormick's upset win over former U.S. Senator Robert P. Casey Jr. last year, has issued an early endorsement of State Treasurer Stacey Garrity as its candidate to take on incumbent Governor Josh Shapiro next year. 4 years ago, a nine-candidate field competed in a primary with no endorsement, paving the way for Shapiro's landslide victory in the general election. This time, the GOP has quickly coalesced behind Garrity, who immediately went on the offensive, faulting Shapiro for being overly ambitious, fiscally irresponsible, and for failing to get a state budget passed nearly 3 months past the constitutional deadline. Speaking of Shapiro, a book released this week by former Vice President Kamala Harris paints the Pennsylvania governor in an unflattering light. Harris dished dirt on Shapiro, saying she bypassed him to become her running mate in last year's presidential election because he, quote, ultimately came across as too ambitious to trust as her number two, end quote. Budget deadlines are a problem at both the state and national levels. While Pennsylvania is poised to enter its third month without a new budget in place, the federal government will again miss the October 1st deadline for a new budget. It has been decades since Congress passed a federal budget, relying instead on continuing resolutions to keep dollars flowing. House Republicans have passed a continuing resolution to avert a government shutdown, but Democrats in the Senate are unwilling to put up the votes needed to get to a two-thirds majority to end debate and take up the legislation. Failure to do so by October 1st would mean some federal government services would be halted, although defense and entitlement spending would continue uninterrupted. The fifth annual March for Life took place in Harrisburg this past week as thousands of pro-life advocates descended on the steps of the state capitol for the rally organized by the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Local news station ABC 27 said the gathering was one of the largest of the year as participants rallied in support of protections for the unborn. Center City, Philadelphia, has not bounced back from the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic, which saw a migration of workers from their offices to their homes. As a result, the Philadelphia Inquirer reports that several of the office buildings have sold for less than half of what their owners paid for them and less than half of their assessed value. The precipitous decline in real estate values has an impact on both the City of Philadelphia and the Philadelphia School District, which depend on revenue from real estate taxes to fund a significant portion of their budgets. At the other end of the state, similar trends have affected the City of Pittsburgh and the Pittsburgh School District. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. With electric prices rising and concern growing over the future dependability of the electric supply, Governor Josh Shapiro this week sought to place blame on the operators of the PJM power grid. Our Capital Watch crew is here to take a look at that claim. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, and Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation for a Capital Watch roundtable discussion. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your Capitol Watch All-Stars. From the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, President and CEO, Rebecca Euler. Rebecca, thanks so much for being here.
Happy to be here with you again, David. Thank you.
And my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, thanks so much for being here.
You're welcome, David. It's great to be here with you.
Well, it's been another astounding time here in Sin City, Harrisburg, PA, that every time I think I'm cynical enough, something happens to remind me that I need to catch up. And this was another one of those occasions. So it seems as though Governor Shapiro has identified rising energy costs as a potential political pitfall for him. And so he is now in the process of trying to find someone else to blame, and that he has decided that he is going to assess blame on the PJM interconnection, the people who manage the grid.
And the grid that we're speaking of it's a multi-state organization that allows for efficient, safe, timely delivery of power to consumers and
right.
all those who need it. Electric power. And it's been in existence for many, many years. It's not there for political purposes or anything like that. But now the governor has chosen to blame it's one of those blame games. It reminds me of this. You have a kid who knocks over a lamp, and then his mom walks in the room and she notices that it's broken, and the kid just points to the cat. And essentially that's what's happening right now. Josh Shapiro has in this case, his policies have boosted the cost of electricity and threatened to do so much more severely in the coming months and years. And he is pointing at PJM, which is as neutral and unblameworthy as the cat.
Yes.
And
yes.
So Josh Shapiro, the governor, has chosen to make PJM a fall guy, essentially, for his policies that have driven up the cost of electricity.
Yes. You got to be impressed with the extent of the governor's play here, because he convened what he called a summit of the states in PJM for the purpose of haranguing the grid operator. State Senator Gene Yaw, who's the chairman of the Senate Energy and Environment Committee, he put it especially well, said that PJM is like air traffic control. They don't own the airport. They don't own any of the airlines. They just want to make sure that the planes take off and land safely. He said it's like blaming air traffic control for the price of your plane ticket. And so for purposes of, again, using PJM as a whipping boy, he actually held this summit.
Yeah. And it is really interesting to me, too, because Pennsylvania, in fact, is the largest net contributor of energy to the PJM grid. So Pennsylvania, by far, is sort of the biggest stake in the PJM, because we do produce the most energy of any other state in the network.
This is what's so infuriating about all this. I mean, beyond just the governor's bravado in trying to find, somebody to blame, but that energy should be a net positive, not just a net positive, it should be a dramatic positive for Pennsylvania's economy, Pennsylvania's consumers, and yet our decision makers, starting with the governor himself, have gone down a path that has sought to stifle the production of Pennsylvania's native resources, coal, oil, natural gas, and instead to distort the economy by directing enormous subsidies, mandates, and tax breaks to marginal, inefficient, and intermittent sources like wind, solar, and whatever else they come up with. We've got an enormous amount of these native resources, natural resources, but the governor and his allies on the left, they don't want us to use them.
And that's the thing that's driving up the costs, what you just said. And it's supply and demand, it's economics. And yes, increasing demand for electricity in Pennsylvania, and rightfully so. And hopefully as the years go by and Pennsylvania can invest more in its energy economy, we'll see even more production. And ordinarily you would say we'll see prices drop. But when all those resources are cloaked or burdened with these inefficient ineffective anti-energy policies, it turns the whole thing upside down and makes it get more and more expensive for consumers. A group of people have caused this problem with their regulations and their statutes and their rules that have overreached and really punished the energy market in Pennsylvania. And now they're mad because prices are going up, and so they're blaming the people who didn't vote for any of that stuff.
Correct.
That I just described. The people who were trying just to get a decent shot for Pennsylvania consumers and people looking for good jobs in the gas industry, and instead they've been punished by these programs, and that the folks who have been trying to undermine Pennsylvania's success in terms of energy are all out there pointing in the other direction, saying someone must have done this. I don't know who.
Yes.
When it was
yes.
them.
Yes. Yes. You know, it's like the internet meme with the guy in the hot dog suit. We're all looking for the guy who did this. And when you look at the actual price of natural gas on the wellhead in Pennsylvania, it's very low. The difficulty is a lot of it is trapped on the wellhead because we don't have enough carry-away infrastructure with pipeline, that the energy sector has been under the threat of either a new and additional severance tax on top of all the other costs of doing business, and or the threat of a carbon tax on top of everything else put forward by Governor Tom Wolf and by Governor Josh Shapiro, and that this has been a reason why no more wells have been drilled and no more gas-fired power plants have come online. People are not willing to invest private sector dollars in an environment, in a business environment that is uncertain. People want to know what the rules are so that they can take a calculated risk about what their return will be in the future. And so Governor Shapiro wants to find the people who did this. He should seek out a reflective surface and take a good look at the guy looking back at him.
Well, it was certainly directly tied to the governor's refusal to get Pennsylvania out of the RGGI compact.
Yes.
Which is a carbon tax, plain and simple. And it's there because of the governor, and he won't do anything about it. And he, again, pointing fingers, placing the blame elsewhere. And now he has his own special initiatives he calls PACER and PRESS, which are essentially more carbon taxes. And he's pushing those. He calls it a lightning plan. I don't know exactly what that's supposed to mean.
I think that's a Ben Franklin reference, but I don't get it.
But it's again, punishing consumers in Pennsylvania. It's taking away from us the benefits of our natural resources by these ill-conceived tax programs that just force the entire thing to operate under this horrible weight of economic inefficiency when it doesn't have to.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so I think with the governor's two acronyms, I think PRESS is the state carbon tax. So instead of having the RGGI carbon tax, which is a multi-state scheme, that this would just be us like doing violence to ourselves.
And if they would actually get enacted, you'd see electricity rates increasing by 60%. Residential electric bills would more than double.
Hmm. I mean, who needs that? I don't need that. Do you need that, Rebecca?
Absolutely not. But I mean, it's like Steve has said, this is the result of policies that have been implemented over the past several years. And we're facing down new proposed policies that would make it even worse. But I mean, even over the past couple of years, state and federal policies have put large baseload energy producers out of business, including several large coal-fired power plants in Pennsylvania, which were large baseload providers of energy, and a lot of natural gas-fired power plants as well. So state and federal policies have already put a lot of big energy out of business, and RGGI is keeping new energy projects from being built right now. So those policies have had an impact over the past couple of years, and these new policies that the governor's proposing are just creating an environment such that it's disincentivizing any new energy and development whatsoever, like you said. And to layer on top of that, like you said, David, the fact that we haven't been able to build new pipelines to get the gas out of the areas where it's drilled and into the areas where it needs to be used is another major issue. And that is a regulatory issue and one where we have to solve the problem of permitting and development. So that is another issue, another policy issue that can be solved. And all of these policy issues layer on top of each other and have caused the problem that we have now and are going to make it worse if we don't solve them.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. And you want to talk about that negative environment for investment and production, especially when it comes to infrastructure, that when Josh Shapiro, as Attorney General, was running for governor, that Attorney General Shapiro brought out criminal indictments against a pipeline company, and that he had a grand jury issue a report. Well, if you know anything about the energy industry, and if you know, just to talk about the after effects, first of all, the governor pursued and won zero criminal convictions. I mean, he just used it to shake down more fines out of the energy company, but this was all a play for headlines. And if you read the grand jury report, the untold story is this. DEP is the one that set the path of the pipeline and the method by which the pipeline would be drilled. And so it was DEP that mandated 1,000 underground stabs, which of course maximizes the risk of hitting something that you didn't know was there, a void or an aquifer that then has to be remediated. When the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission laid out the path for the Atlantic Sunrise pipeline from up north Wilkes-Barre down to Cove Point, Maryland, the federal government had four underground stabs, only four. And so you look at this, okay, so DEP made the energy company do it this way, and then the energy company remediated by what is known as trenching, which is digging a ditch, taking the earth out very carefully by layer, building the pipeline, and then carefully restoring the land. So basically, they fixed the problem by doing it the way they would have done it if the government hadn't forced them to do it the sloppier, more dangerous way. So, I mean, it's just infuriating that, again, that there's scapegoating and second-guessing, where for people who know the industry, who understand this, recognize that it's all out of bunk. And Steve, your point, sensible, basic regulation is necessary, of course. But strangling the industry through regulatory overkill and malicious enforcement and abuse of public office by people who are just grandstanding for their own gain, like, this is what is preventing Pennsylvania from prospering when we have this, what should be this massive advantage. And I think I may have shared this on an earlier program, that the Pennsylvania's output of natural gas, which of course is enormous, it's only a quarter of our potential maximum output. Like, think about that. Think about what it would mean to supercharge our economy with three times again the energy that we get today from Pennsylvania natural gas.
And the sad part about this is it's affecting families in a serious way. Families are struggling with inflation ever since 2020 or thereabouts. And Rebecca, I know I was speaking with you a little bit before we went on air. You had some charts, some facts and figures about when the spike happened in energy prices in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it started happening right after 2020. So that's when energy prices started increasing. And I think we can safely say that's when federal policy really, really started making the energy industry
less viable.
Less viable, less looking like it's going to be less a good investment.
Yeah, the prices just went up and have continued to go up. And I mean, of course, in the midst of inflation, you would expect that energy prices would also be inflated along with the rest of that difficulty.
Right.
But you answer inflation by increasing supply. If the price is going up, the best way to get prices down is to expand supply.
And that's the market signaling. We need more of this thing. We need more, in this case, we need more access to the resources that are in Pennsylvania's soil and rock formations and so forth. It's there. It's valuable. It's ready to help us today. But normally, you would see an influx of activity. Instead, because of these misguided attempts to regulate the industry, it's become very unattractive to those who have the capital and the drilling equipment and so forth to set up shop in Pennsylvania, when other states treat them with a much more welcome attitude.
Yes, exactly. And I'll give you one small correction, because it's not really so much to regulate the industry as it is to control it. Rather than having the market dynamic in effect that the government seeks to control, our state government, the Shapiro administration, seeks to control the energy sector and with it our economy. We talked about the governor's two proposals. The one is a state regi, a state carbon tax. The other one is to overthrow our competitive market for electricity that we have today, and instead for state government to dictate the sources of where our electricity will come from. He would cut the market in half. Half of Pennsylvania's electricity would be generated by sources of his choosing. Again, as if government knows better how the economy is going to function. And one of the things that you said, Steve, that is so important, price signals. Price signals. These are the things that the market responds to in the same way that our bodies respond to pain. Like, oh, that gets your attention. You need to change something. That government cannot experience risk. Risk is what drives the market. Because it's in the private sector, it's either your money or money that you are responsible for and accountable for. That's why when people make decisions, they only do it when they have the highest level of confidence that things are going to work out for them. It doesn't always, of course. There's risk in the marketplace, and investors sometimes lose. But the government is completely numb to that. Government can't feel that at all. This is like what you see with Solyndra and other things where been massive investments of taxpayer money, and it all goes up in smoke, and the politicians go, oh, well. Well, no, that's real. That's real money that should have gone to some productive purpose. But because politicians want a grandstand or that they want to be in control of the economy, that these kinds of dumb policies are put in place. And insofar as other states have pro-production policies that work better than ours, that's where the investment's going to go. That's where the activity's going to go. That's where the prosperity's going to happen.
I would go a step further, and I like what you say. They're sort of insulated from risk. But I would say that the government is also insulated from understanding the results of the decisions they make.
Right.
So when you're talking about the regulatory environment and the over-regulation that's really holding up development, I know PJM has a lot of projects in the hopper, like ready to develop, but they haven't been able to move them forward because of regulatory issues, haven't been able to get them approved by DEP. Well, those decisions that are made about regulations, the government has no impact. There's no impact that they are able to sort of internalize from that. So they don't make the connection between the decisions they make and the impact on the taxpayer or the ratepayer. So there's another impact there as well.
Yeah, it's somebody else's problem. This is what I describe as being opportunity cost. Things should be going better than they are. We have a boundless future in front of us if we allow the genius of our own people, the industry of our own people, just allow our citizenry to make informed decisions, to take calculated risks with their own assets, with their own companies, that the market signals, the price signals, like that's how you will get the new production and infrastructure and the power plants and all those things that we need. Before we're done, let's go around the horn. Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and your group and the work that you do?
They can visit commonwealthfoundation.org.
Where can people go to learn more about the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association?
They can find us at pmta.org.
And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org. From Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks so much for listening. We will catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
In the wake of the assassination of conservative activist Charlie Kirk, a national dialogue has taken place relative to how overheated political rhetoric has contributed to the escalating trend of political violence. Pennsylvania's two leading elected Democrats, U.S. Senator John Fetterman and Governor Josh Shapiro, have both contributed to that dialogue, each condemning violence and calling for more civility in the political arena. They have condemned the Kirk assassination, rightly positing there is no place for such violence in the American political arena. Governor Josh Shapiro should hold the moral high ground on the issue. He himself, was targeted for harm during a firebombing that heavily damaged Pennsylvania's governor's residence last spring. Thankfully, neither the governor nor members of his family who were at the residence at the time were harmed. Speaking at the Eradicate Hate Global Summit 2025 in Pittsburgh, Governor Shapiro joined with former Governor Tom Corbett in a bipartisan condemnation of political violence. Shapiro, Corbett, and other past Pennsylvania governors had joined together following the attack on the governor's residence to denounce the violence, which appears to have been motivated by the anti-Semitic views of the alleged perpetrator. But then Shapiro veered off course. Shapiro, who is considered to be a likely candidate for the Democratic presidential nomination in 2028, could not resist launching a political attack on President Donald Trump. He claimed without merit that the president and other top administration officials are, quote, raising the chances of future political violence. He accused the president of cherry-picking incidents of political violence to cast the left in an unfavorable light. However, there is no need to cherry-pick. From the Black Lives Matter riots of 2020, to the shooting of Congressman Steve Scalise, to the threats against conservative U.S. Supreme Court justices, to the two assassination attempts on President Trump, to the successful assassination of Charlie Kirk, the use of political violence, while not completely one-sided, is indeed a tactic most employed by the radical left. Thus did Governor Shapiro negate the impact of his anti-hate message by turning his speech into a political attack designed to further his own ambitions. U.S. Senator John Fetterman has become a lonely voice of occasional reason within the Democrat Party. While he still ascribes to radical left views on many issues, he has been arguing that his party needs to do something other than just be against Donald Trump. It is a plea that has gone largely unheeded. In a gesture of bipartisan unity, Fetterman and his Republican counterpart, U.S. Senator Dave McCormick, appeared together in a Common Ground segment hosted by Bret Baier on Fox News. While acknowledging that they disagree on many issues, Pennsylvania's two U.S. senators expressed a personal friendship and talked about ways that they have found to work together. Fetterman drilled down on hate speech that compares President Trump to notorious figures in history such as Adolf Hitler and the left's propensity to label Trump as fascist, a Nazi, or to claim he is an autocrat. Fetterman pointed out that type of rhetoric is extreme untrue and stokes the climate for political violence, saying, quote, "You don't compare anyone to Hitler. When you do, you incite somebody to take them out." He is correct in his assertion that the Democrat Party must move beyond simply opposing Trump and offer the American people well-reasoned policy prescriptions designed to address the problems facing our nation. Just as Josh Shapiro is incapable of not turning every appearance into a forum for his own political ambitions, the Democrat Party at large appears unable to do anything other than oppose Donald Trump. In neither case, is it a prescription for success? With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 30 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WHSK-FM in Bloomsburg, WNTP-AM and WFIL-AM in Philadelphia, along with WJSM-FM in Martinsburg, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom help to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Frederick W. Anton III Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.